This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Anthony Smith arrives in a big way. Gustafsson is out of UFC 227 after his opponent withdraws just days prior. UFC 228 tickets on sale tomorrow, and there is still no main event. The UFC heads to Calgary for one of the most star-studded televised cards in a while. Darren Till may be getting the next welterweight title shot, or is he? We are joined by the Canadian gangster himself, Olivier Aubin-Mercier, who fights this weekend in Calgary against Alexander Hernandez on the main card. And guess who's back from Italy? Technically New York. Bazooka Joe returns after a really crazy Glory card. Glory always delivering in New York, and thanks to those listening on TSN Radio in Toronto and Ottawa, or to the podcast. Please tell your friends, review the show, and subscribe if you're interested. And we appreciate you listening. Joe, it's good to have you back.
I am back with a different color, too.
Yes.
I'm surprised you recognize me when I came in.
Yes, more olive in color, yes.
Yeah, more olive, caramelly color.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so, but it feels good. I needed that little break. I needed some salt water. I needed some good food in me, good pasta. And I mean, one of my favorite things, it's the Sicilian breakfast. So listen to this. You get a slushy, basically. It's called granita, which is, it's like iced, I think it's cream and stuff, but it's, you can get the flavor of almond, pistachio, lemon, there's strawberry, but it's very, it's basically like an Italian slushy, and you get this bun called a brioche. So you eat ice, like the slushy with the bread. So you dip the bread in this. My favorite was the almond and pistachio. So then you dip the bread and you eat it and you have your little espresso and there's breakfast. Like, how can you not want that?
I heard that if you order a cappuccino after like noon, they look at you like you're crazy.
Yeah, that's what people say. I don't know. I didn't notice that.
No, okay. Okay, that's fine.
But I mean, afternoon, no one's really working. It's siesta time. So usually it's too hot. So everybody just takes a break and then they come back to work at like 4 or 5 o'clock.
Europe sounds
awesome.
Pretty
nice.
Yeah, the siesta. I like this idea. I could get behind this.
Yeah, take nice naps, break, go out with some friends, maybe swim in the beach a little bit and then go back to work.
Yeah. What's not to like?
Exactly.
So you had fun?
Yeah, it was good. It was really a good balance for me because I've never been to Sicily, and that's where both my parents were born. So I got good culture, good family, good vacation. I didn't realize I had so much family there. I had a lot of cousins that I didn't even know about, aunts, uncles. So overall, great experience. I got to spend some good quality time with my family. So that was a nice one for me.
How long did it take you to turn off, to be like, okay, I'm disconnecting. It's show time.
It took a couple days, but once I got there, I was like, I'm at the beach. You know, I'm laying, I'm chilling. I got my little Euro swim shorts on, and it's nice.
Did you do any kickboxing-related stuff, any gym stuff down there?
I tried to do a little bit of exercise. Like, I woke up, I tried to do some push-ups at first. I did some runs, but then I'm like, yeah, I'm on vacation. I'm like, it's healthier for me because I work out every day, twice a day for my whole life, so I needed that nice little month. It was like 18 days just to like soak up with sodium and just, but now when I come back I feel amazing.
Yeah, so you that probably feel like you needed. Could destroy people right now.
Oh yeah, I feel good. Hungry, so like I'm training harder than ever, but I really didn't have time coming home. 4 days later I'm off to New York, and you know, so I really didn't have time to reflect on the vacation, time to just right back to work.
When's Glory coming to Canada? What's going on here? It was supposed to be this year, right?
Apparently this year.
Oh, still this year. Okay.
There was talks again, November, but I'm gonna say 2019. I'm
okay,
gonna keep
so
it very general.
You don't think it's gonna happen?
I think 2019 will be the time. Okay. But they're still confident. Former CEO who's helping get the deal here confirmed to me that, you know what, it's gonna happen. So
okay,
it is gonna happen. We just have to be a little bit more patient.
I can't wait. I love it.
It'll be good.
Yeah, it's awesome. Right now, combat sports in Canada is looking good because we've got that amazing card in Calgary coming up.
Oh, yeah,
I think this card in Calgary is better than 227, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, and it's kind of slipped under the radar. I feel like it wasn't getting promoted as much, you know, for the quality that it is. So yeah, I'm excited. There's some fights that I saw that I didn't even know were happening. Like when I followed Duke Rufus, and just to hear about Magdessian Pearson, I was just like, that fight, I didn't even know that was happening.
Oh, it's a great fight, yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of hidden gems in this one.
And do you know when the last time Jose Aldo fought a non-title fight was, what the date was?
I want to say, I'm going to take a wild guess, 2014?
June 8th, 2009.
2009?
Yeah. That's going back to the WEC days because he was the champion there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the last time he had a 3-round fight.
That's right, because he lost it and then he got an immediate rematch with, he never really had it. Yeah,
yeah.
Wow.
That's pretty crazy. Isn't that crazy? That's almost 10 years.
2014 was Joanna Jędrzejczyk.
Was the last time she had
it. Last time she had a 3-rounder was 2014. Yeah. So yeah, I kind of went with that. But
yeah, it's crazy.
Dang.
It's the first time Aldo's been on a televised UFC card.
He's got to be happy about that, I guess.
Being
older, not having to do 5 rounds.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't understand. Those extra 2 rounds are stressful. I mean, there's a big difference in the intensity in your camp that you have to do. I mean, even with kickboxing is 3 3-minute rounds. And people think it's so easy. But when you add the fourth and the fifth round, man, it's harder than you think.
Just
training,
yeah, it's crazy.
Like,
yeah.
To do, exert yourself for those extra two rounds, that's when you kind of need a different strategy. You can't stay on the gas pedal the whole time for the five rounds. So that's where strategy becomes a little different. Like, if you think of kickboxing versus MMA versus boxing. With boxing, you have to have a little bit more strategy. You have to pace yourself a little bit more. You have to sometimes take rounds off. You know, sometimes boxers will go 3 or 4 rounds, take a round or two off, and then come pick it up again, because you have to strategize a little bit more that way with your pacing. So it's different.
So when you fought, you had trouble taking your foot off the gas pedal.
Yeah.
Was that your problem against DeBont? Because the fifth round was clearly your worst round.
No, I just
fight.
Got caught.
You just got caught.
I just got caught.
So
and
you were
then,
fresh, you
then there
fine.
Goes. Because if you watch the fight, I went before I got dropped in that fourth round. I was still going with a crazy pace.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's why I'm asking about the
and
gas
after,
pedal.
Then
yeah.
After that, I was just in survival mode. So, but really, I've had some fights where I can go five rounds. I paced myself and I can go. But there's times where, you know, you take a little break. You'll circle on the outside a little bit, catch your breath. You might take more moments off like that. But every time I attacked, it was for that knockout. So.
Yeah, exactly. So that is a tough thing to do. And Aldo's, a guy who's pretty, like, he pushes a pretty, like, fast pace also.
Yeah.
Throwing those wild, those crazy leg kicks all fight.
That's why I think it favors him. That's why I think it favors him. Like, I mean, I think he can do some real good damage in his first three. I mean, everything with power, so. But he's so experienced. I mean, my issue with Aldo lately is what made him so successful were those brutal leg kicks.
Yeah.
And he was just damaging people, slowing people
Holloway,
down.
He's got like thin legs. He wasn't using them.
And then he doesn't use them. All
he
of a sudden, he's been boxing
too.
More. I think I was reading somewhere before, he's working with just boxers now. He's working his improving his hands. But you're missing out on what made you so successful, man. Well, like, get back to them.
The weird thing was, after, like, going into the second fight, in all these interviews, people are like, do you feel like you didn't leg kick him enough? You didn't do the leg kick? And he was like, yeah, I did. And then the second fight starts, he doesn't do it again.
He doesn't do it again. Like, I don't know, man. Is he scared to throw them? Is he having some
there's
damage?
There's a lot going on with Aldo right now, because Pedro Neres, I think, has left Nova Uniao.
Yeah.
And a lot of the other fighters there, I imagine, are probably going elsewhere because they don't have really a head coach there. Unless Pedro Neres is leaving at the end of the year. I can't remember. I remember reading about it. So, who knows what's going on with Aldo? And a lot of people think Aldo's done, but
I don't think he has that motivation anymore.
Yeah.
From my understanding, I heard he has only a few fights left. Is that what you've been hearing?
That's I think so. I think he's got a few fights left. Then he wants to do either boxing, and he loves soccer also. So I don't know.
Yeah,
but kicks. He's used those soccer kicks.
I would think so.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point he was training with Andy Sauer, which is one of the best all-time K-1 kickboxers
who still fights
Ryzen. Yeah, he fought in Ryzen. I think he fought Derek Cruikshank at one point.
Yeah, he lost to Cruikshank. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, just an incredible K-1 fighter, and I mean, you got to bring those guys back. Use that type of good boxing to still having good low kicks. Like, picking up a good Dutch coach could be really good for his career.
Yeah,
you know, good boxing mixed with kicks.
But what's he think of his career right now, right? So who knows?
Yeah.
That said, I mean, he's always one fight away from a title shot. I mean, if he beats Stevens and then Ortega needs an opponent, Aldo will be considered.
Yeah. But who knows? If they know he's on his exit strategy, they might not want to push him like that.
Yeah, well, from what I've been hearing, though, is that Holloway's going to be back in there sooner than we thought, and that a Holloway versus Ortega might be happening sooner rather than later.
Let's hear it from you. I mean, I've heard it from different media sources, and you're the one I trust the most. So what, in your mind, is happening with Holloway?
Well, there were rumors that he had a stroke,
which
his agent came out and said was categorically untrue. There was also the thing about water poisoning, that he had water poisoning as a result of
too much water,
too much water, which is possible because he did show a lot of the symptoms of that, where he was kind of really out of it. And then there's also the chance that he got hurt in training camp. But, you know, I spoke to somebody in his camp who said, I don't know when that could have happened. Because he just started showing signs of it on the Monday that he arrived. So, I mean, that said, if you're really sick and you push yourself, like, you can become delirious.
Absolutely.
So, I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of people jumped the gun on what was actually going on with
him. Yeah, someone was saying brain damage right away,
post-concussion,
and he was all whacked out that
way.
But
I think that's what the hospital said. They released him with post-concussion symptoms, is what I believe was the medical report. But I don't know if that was actually ever made public because it's confidential information.
But if you're cutting weight, there's also a dehydration issue, no?
But they said that on Monday when he arrived, before he had really, really started cutting weight, because you have to make weight on the Friday.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't be cutting weight that, like, you'd be doing a very gradual weight cut on the Monday.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And Dana White said the thing on Get Up on ESPN that it was the water poisoning thing. So I don't really know. I don't have any real insight on the subject. But if he's coming back soon, I mean, that must mean that he's cleared and that...
Let's hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too. Because Holloway's still a young guy. Yeah. He's younger than Ortega. People forget that. People think Ortega's like the young prospect. But yeah. Holloway's younger than Ortega.
Really?
Yeah. So
yeah, I wouldn't have. If you gave me $1 million, I would have said Ortega's the younger.
Yeah. No, Holloway's younger. Holloway's younger than him. So... I think he's like 10 years younger than Jose Aldo also, or something along those lines, like something crazy. So, I mean, Holloway's got a great future ahead of him, and I'm glad that he didn't end up going into that fight. Like, can you imagine he pushed through it? Like, you don't know what Max Holloway would have seen there, and judging by his open workout, like, that was not... People were like, he looked like he was barely throwing any weight behind his punches, barely doing anything. So, and then in hindsight, obviously, that was the case. He just wasn't able to do it. So... When that fight will be, I don't know, but they desperately need a main event for September. Like, they got nothing. It's UFC 228. It's on sale to Fight Club members tomorrow, and there's no main event. I should keep checking my phone while we do the show, because one could break.
And I heard Ortega initially wasn't paid, and then he came back with Dana White, and they finally paid him something for his time.
Yeah, they paid him some money, I think, to recoup some costs from his camp. Well, that fight, no UFC 228 announcement. However, if you would like to hear something strange, UFC 230, Madison Square Garden in New York. We heard Rockhold versus Weidman was in the works yesterday.
Yeah, I heard the rumors.
So Rockhold is not going to 205. And now, and I think also on that card, it's like middleweight extravaganza, because we've also got Jacare versus Branch on that card. And now just announced by ESPN's Beto Okamoto, Yoel Romero versus Paulo Costa at middleweight, UFC 230. Wow.
That's a beastly fight.
So I guess, I don't know, maybe Weidman didn't want the fight, but you can't do Yoel versus Rockhold. It just happened. So maybe they said, listen, we're not going to give you Weidman, but we'll give you Yoel Romero, because it looks like Romero wants to get back in there.
So that's Paulo Costa matchup just happened then.
Yeah.
Yeah, because yesterday he was on Helwani's show and he didn't mention anything about it.
So we've got a triple. That's a crazy middleweight triple header. It's almost like a tournament.
But you still have
Gastelum and Whitaker in the mix, right?
I didn't think they wanted to push Paulo Costa that quickly.
Well,
I thought their plan was to kind of keep him and bring him up slow.
Push him. If he loses to Romero, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Romero is one of the best ever at middleweight, probably.
Yeah, that's a great fight.
Because, you know, the reason I say before people get upset that I say he's one of the best ever... How many people can say they're among the best ever at middleweight? Like, Anderson Silva dominated that division for so long that from there, I mean, really, it's just been him and Whitaker and Weidman. And and I guess without a title defense, Rockhold. So there's not a huge sample size of people that are among the best at middleweight.
Yeah.
And Romero beat Rockhold, so Andy beat Weidman.
And news just came out about Anderson Silva that he had tainted supplements. So
yeah, so he's back too.
So
he'll be back in November
too, and
so
he's already wants to fight.
I think he might be eligible for that card too in New York.
November-ish?
Yeah. At first it was reported October. Now I think it's early November. So maybe it might be off by a day or so. But
that'd be nice.
I'd love to see Anderson at Toronto.
Yeah,
that would be fun. But yeah, they're stacking middleweight for that card. That's awesome. Those are three fantastic fights. So good on them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm curious as to what's going to headline that card, because if they're going to do Conor and Khabib in either October or end of December in Vegas...
Which there's still no real talk about it, right?
Well, nothing's confirmed. I mean, the court hearing for McGregor is on Thursday, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So after that, I wouldn't be surprised if a fight announcement happens quickly, because if it is October, they're going to want to promote that thing.
They'll need as much time as possible.
Yeah. But so... If McGregor's not fighting at MSG, hypothetically, then what do you headline at MSG that would make it like a super card? Because every card at MSG so far has been stacked.
Yeah, they always stack the MSG
cards.
I mean,
these are three great fights, don't get me wrong, but what are you going to put at the top of that card to get butts in the seats?
What are your thoughts?
I don't know. Because when you go division by division, and I did this on the last show, there's not really a huge... There's not much to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
Because heavyweight, they're going to wait on Brock, and that's next year. Light heavyweight... Cormier, I don't like. Is Cormier going to risk it and go against? Like,
yeah, light heavyweight's just a mess, because Cormier is not going to defend the belt.
He's not going to
before Lesnar, anyways.
And
right?
I don't think he's going to fight Gustafson. So what's going to happen? I don't know. But then you look at middleweight and Whitaker's out until the beginning of next year. Do you want to do an interim title there? You could, but why? I don't see the point. You've also got him on the Ultimate Fighter with Gastelum, so that would rule Gastelum out likely from an interim fight. You don't want to have him lose an interim title fight and then be on the show with Whitaker for no reason. So they're probably tabling that. Welterweight, Woodley's going to fight on one of these cards against either Covington or Till. And we'll get to that a little bit later.
Yeah, okay.
Or Usman, he mentioned on Helwani's show yesterday as well. And then you've got lightweight, which would be Conor Khabib. You've got featherweight, which is Holloway, which is probably going to happen on one of those cards, whether it's Holloway or Ortega versus somebody for an interim.
Yeah.
So that's going to be on one of these cards. Bantamweight is happening in L.A. Flyweight's happening in L.A. Could they turn that around? Probably
but
for December.
But those aren't big fights regardless.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Know? They're not huge cards.
They're not main eventers
huge
for
main
MSG.
Huge main eventers for MSG,
yeah, and then
no.
In the women's classes, I mean, they're looking at Cyborg versus Nunes for end of year, so... You know, what can you put at the top of that card that's big? And that's when you start thinking, maybe GSP again. Like, you have to come up with something that's going to sell that card and make it a big pay-per-view again. So what's there to choose from? Maybe Nate Diaz. You do some sort of feature fight with Nate Diaz.
Yeah, I heard that they were talking about one of the Diaz brothers.
Well, I don't think they could bring Nick Diaz in right now with his legal problems. Like, if you're going to say, listen, we need to wait for McGregor's legal troubles to clear up, like, what Nick Diaz did was far more serious.
Yeah.
So... You may not want to be throwing his name around as guys. And when I asked Dana about those three, the Diaz brothers and GSP, he said, as far as I'm concerned, they're retired. So
yeah, are they in the testing pool still?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Both of them are in?
Yeah, both of them are in. Both of them have been tested in recent months, as is George. And Lesnar's in it now. He was tested for the first time recently. So these guys are all eligible. I don't think Rousey is leaving wrestling anytime soon.
And any word on John Jones?
Well, that's the other thing. You know, if John Jones, for whatever reason, gets a 1-year suspension, then he's active, like, at the end of this month.
Yeah.
Right? Because that test happened in July of last year. Or actually, no, it happened during his weight cut, his, like, weigh-in day, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, last year. So it would have been end of July, which is, basically in a week, he would be eligible if they said it was a year. And that leads me to believe that they're probably going to have a John Jones verdict pretty soon, because if it's already been a year, what are we waiting for?
And this goes back to the big controversy of not having those big superstars fight as much anymore, right? I mean, we don't have those big names anymore to kind of piggyback on.
Yeah. Well, if Jones is eligible, maybe you have Jones-Cormier in MSG because you do that fight again.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
But DC wouldn't want that. He wants his Lesnar shot, right?
But he still can get it. Because if that's a light heavyweight fight, even if he loses,
yeah, but
to Jones,
the magnitude of it wouldn't be as big. If he loses, and then you're like,
yeah,
because right now we're putting him on this pedestal as the baddest man,
yeah, the champ, best ever.
And if he loses, which is likely against Jon Jones, and then you know more people are going to watch Jones
Cormier,
and Lesnar.
I don't know if Cormier shies away from that. Like, I think if they say to Cormier, "Listen, Jones is clear,"
I think at this point of his career, I don't think he will.
You don't think so?
No, he just got over that little hump, right?
Yeah.
He's got that little bit of just, you know,
he's got that pep in his
step
right now.
He's got the pep in his step now. He's like, who?
I'm the guy.
Because even when you
John
ask
Jones
him,
who?
You're like, exactly. He's putting John Jones away because he's like, now he's the heavyweight champ, right? So
yeah.
I think he wants to keep that feeling. He's near the end of his career. I think it would be a bad move to go back and fight Jones there. But take that money, the big mega fight. That's the one.
Yeah, that Lesnar money, you don't want to turn that down.
Yeah.
And I mean, if what happens if you fight Jones and get injured, you know?
Absolutely.
Always, yeah,
you
always
don't want to give up that money fight with Lesnar. That's the big payday.
You know, something interesting was said by John Orand. I think I might have mentioned this on a previous podcast of Sports Business Daily. He mentioned that he would bet that Lesnar's fight is going to be on ESPN, that there would be a part of the ESPN deal is to deliver Brock Lesnar to ESPN because Lesnar's eligibility aligns with when the ESPN deal starts, like right at the beginning of January.
Okay.
So that's interesting to me because how many people watch Lesnar versus Cormier on ESPN?
Yeah.
Like you're talking probably 10 million.
But wouldn't you want pay-per-view percent on that?
Well, but think about this.
How much ESPN would kind of...
No, it's not even about that. It's like let's say, how much do you think, what's the ceiling for that on pay-per-view? Probably 1.5 million, which would still be, I think,
that's
a tad
high. Probably a little high, yeah.
What's more valuable having, like let's say you're getting $50 a pop.
Okay.
For every pay-per-view, you do one. Let's say it's $1 million. You make $50 million on pay-per-view. You're going to make $10 million from ESPN for every card you deliver to ESPN. Then that's a significant difference between $50 and $10 million. But if you're getting 10 million viewers on free TV rather than 1.2, 1.3 on pay-per-view, is it worth taking the financial hit to get your product in front of that many eyeballs?
I get from a business standpoint.
And that's a
from
that's
business. I would say I could understand, but if you're Lesnar or DC, you want the pay-per-view points, right?
Yeah, but they'd get paid.
They'd have to
say, like, we're going to give you a flat rate each of whatever, $10 million.
Yeah, like, if this is what we predict high, you would make off of pay-per-view points, because they won't. I think that would be probably the smarter move, but that's just going to cost the UFC a lot of money.
Yeah. So it's interesting. It's an interesting thought. And John Orand is very connected to ESPN in terms of reporting on this particular deal. He wrote a great piece on the WWE deal and the UFC TV deals, both of those TV deals kind of aligning. And I trust what John Orand has to say. But at the same time, I think, like you said, putting it on pay-per-view would be, like, it would be strange to miss out on that opportunity.
Yeah, because I think we talked about this when Overeem got dropped into the prelim.
Yeah.
And we're like, that's not a bad move. There's more people watching that than they would be on the pay-per-view.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
exactly.
If you're not getting pay-per-view percentages, you want to go where you're going to get the most attention.
Mm-hmm.
So
sure.
That's why
eyeballs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not that Cormier and Lesnar need the eyeballs. Like it's going to be Cormier's last ever fight.
It's money. Yeah, it's money, right?
Yeah.
And Lesnar's not going to come back. He wants to maximize. And
Lesnar might come back. Who knows? If you put a John Jones fight in front of him, like a super fight with John Jones, let's say he loses to Cormier. Cormier retires. The heavyweight championship is vacant. And you do a tournament that starts with John Jones versus Lesnar, and you've got a bunch of other heavyweights, Volkov, whatever, all these guys. Verdum, if he's eligible, and you do some sort of tournament, and you started off with that, you're going to get numbers.
That could be
pull
cool.
Numbers.
Yeah, a nice UFC heavyweight tournament.
Yeah, like I have a pay-per-view that's just all heavyweight fights.
Yeah, I don't mind that.
Tournament, yeah.
It's something different again. I mean, Bellator's heavyweight tournament seems to be working.
And they're doing their welterweight tournament. That's awesome. Like, for next year, that's going to be phenomenal.
Yeah, I heard first round probably Michael Venom Page versus Paul Daly.
Yeah, it looks like they're putting that together. And all the fights are going to be 5 rounds, apparently.
Really?
For the whole tournament.
It's kind of good. I mean,
I
you're
going
to fight for a championship. But
yeah, but I don't love it. It's a lot of you're risking your basically your whole tournament. I love that Ed Ruth is in it. Ed Ruth, to me, is the dark horse to win that thing.
Okay, I don't know much about him.
So Ed Ruth is a very, very high-level collegiate wrestler, Olympic level almost, just missed the Olympic team. And he's built kind of like John Jones, very, very long reach for his size, but he's extremely raw. So the question is, how much can he put together by the time this tournament rolls around? Because to me, he's a future champion, whether it's in this tournament or not. I think if he puts it all together, the one thing that's suspect about Ed Ruth is he did get tagged once and it looked like his chin didn't, it held up, but he got rocked.
The guy
that really had no business rocking him.
The goal would be probably MVP. Right?
No, I don't know. Like maybe Rory. I don't know. I don't think there is a goal.
Would Rory?
I think just the
Rory
having a good tournament.
Be in the tournament
he is
would
in
he?
The tournament. Yeah, he's in the tournament. He's defending his title in every one of his fights.
Really?
Yeah.
But isn't he fighting Musasi next?
Yeah, he's fighting Musasi next, and the tournament I think is starting towards the end of the
year.
So
he's fighting Musasi for the 185 title.
For the 185 title, and then he'll be in the tournament starting early next year.
And he's defending every time he fights.
Every time, because the winner of the tournament will be the champion, but.
But then he's not really fighting the number one contender, right?
Yeah, well, he's fighting whoever he's matched up against in the tournament. And these are all, like, top guys, right?
That's interesting.
Yeah, so I like it.
I would have thought the winner,
would get a title shot.
Would
but
get
Rory's
a title shot. Over, I didn't know he was in it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense.
It's kind of cool. Again, they're throwing stuff at the wall, and I respect that.
Yeah. But, I mean, and then you have Rory fighting a lower name and possibly losing his title.
Yeah. Maybe he fights Ed Ruth and loses.
I mean,
but
true.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Different.
It's like, okay, you got a new champion. He's defending again in 3 months against Michael Page.
Yeah,
that's how the tournament brackets shake out.
Okay.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's not bad, but as a champion, I don't think it really solidifies you in that upper position that you want to be in as
kind
a champion.
The kind
right?
of weird thing is, like, what happens if Rory loses in the first round and
he's
got a new champion every round? It gets confusing, but it's still kind of cool.
But
it's an interesting
concept. Different.
I like it.
It's different. Yeah, why not?
Different is good. And I think that the UFC needs to kind of take a page out of that book, try to think a little bit differently. In terms of their booking.
See, I like the concept of having tournaments on different days, just like Bellator did. You can have, on the same night, the semifinals happens, and then, both of the winner out of this, you can have a graphic on TV showing that this is it, the winner fights this, and then the winner gets a title shot. Show people the path that they got to follow. It gets people more invested if you know what the path is. I mean, instead of all these interim, do these little mini kind of tournaments on one day, and then the winner fights somewhere else, and then it just builds a different storyline, which I don't mind.
We haven't really talked about UFC Hamburg, and there's not really much to say. One thing that I kind of mentioned to you before the show is that I'm a little bit annoyed about everybody talking about how boring the card was. And I'm not saying that it was the most intriguing theater out there, but I think we learned a lot about some of the fighters on this card that we can take with us. Like Manny Bermudez, for example, choking out Davy Grant within the first minute of a fight. He looks like a guy that's going to be a guy at bantamweight. Alexander Rakic 30-24s against Justin Ledet at light heavyweight, a division that is sorely in need of guys moving up and getting some momentum. He looks like a guy. Nasrat Haqparast completely outclassing Mark Diakhaizi looks like a guy.
Yeah, he looked good.
Stefan Struve still not knowing how to use his reach.
Is he done? Should he give
it up? I think
he's
been done for a while, to be honest.
Man, like, if you're that tall and you still haven't established a jab in your career, man, like, what are you doing?
Yeah, or even an effective head kick that he could really throw every time.
You're so tall, no one should be even hitting you. Yeah. Like, the other tall fighter we always relate him to is Semi Schilt. Semi Schilt never got hit because he kept throwing front kicks,
never
he had a jab, stay
he
long.
Honestly, just watch videos of Semi Schilt as you're training and emulate
How
it.
How does Tybura get close enough to hit an elbow?
And take you down.
And take you down.
Yeah.
No, if you're the shorter fighter,
well,
not one person
hitting
should
the
hit
elbow
you an elbow.
Is inexcusable. That's inexcusable.
You can't
if you get hit in the face with an elbow by a guy who's 6 inches shorter than
that's
you
not,
and has a reach that's whatever.
Even
like
in the clinch,
you
just lay on top of him, put your elbows on. You should not be hit with an elbow or a knee if you're the shorter fighter. If you're fighting someone shorter,
he's one of the most frustrating guys in UFC
history. With a kickboxing background,
With a kickboxing background, he's from the Netherlands.
That's the problem. The Dutch don't like the jab as much. That could be an issue too. They like low kicks, kicking,
but even his low kicks, he's not keeping guys at bay with it.
I don't know. It's crazy. It's crazy to see.
And then we saw two other guys that I think made huge statements in Corey Anderson and Anthony Smith. Like, Corey Anderson, to me, really put on a show against Glover Teixeira. You asked me before the show if I think Glover's done. I don't think so. I mean, Glover just beat Misha Cirkunov. Like, let's not talk about the guy like he's damaged, like he's done.
Yeah.
But Anderson just looks like a much improved fighter.
Is Glover just look older than he actually is?
No, Glover's old. Glover's like 38.
Okay. I thought you were gonna like surprise me with something.
No,
but
Glover's 38. He's up there. He's older than Shogun, I think, who lost in the first round within a minute and a half to Anthony Smith, who looks like he made the right call moving up to light heavyweight.
Yeah, dang.
He's a huge light heavyweight.
He was big. He's tall. He's strong. He likes to finish. He works with one of my friends, Mark Montoya from Denver. So man, he looked good. And especially in a light heavyweight division that needs a new star, like you were mentioning.
Yeah,
man,
need many new stars.
You got to think, he went from not being ranked to now people talking about him almost potentially
like
going for
an
interim title shot or something. Like, he's already talking
Darren Till was on Fight Pass a year ago.
Yeah, and he's like, hey, if DC doesn't want to defend the belt, he's already talking about possible interim, contendership.
There's nobody in this division. Yeah.
That's insane.
He called out Alexander Gustafsson right after the fight.
Yeah.
And if Gustafsson was healthy, like, I would have taken that fight if I'm Gustafsson, because this guy just fought twice
in
the last
2 months.
Even a
fight with Misha would be fun. Yeah. Misha would be fun for him to fight.
Yeah, and Misha's out in Vegas now.
Yeah, he's moved there. Yeah, I heard he moved. I didn't hear from him, but I heard from his very close friends that he moved there. He needed the bodies. He needed higher-level guys at the local Extreme Couture here. It's a good gym, but they didn't have... Guys, you got to think, he's fighting number 1-2 in the world at light heavyweight.
Yeah.
You need big bodies. You need experienced guys. You know, Misha's wrestling's probably not even tested. He's probably just ragdolling everybody around here.
He's like a judo champion, right?
Yeah.
So he's definitely got the pedigree.
He just needs
just a
the bodies.
Of, yeah, you're right. It's just a matter of the bodies.
So good for him. He needed that career move, and I think hopefully we see... a new Misha.
Yeah, I haven't heard from him in a while. I'm going to see if I could send him a note and see if he wants to jump on the phone.
Yeah,
I asked him to come in studio and he didn't respond.
No.
But I guess it's because he's already out there.
Yeah.
So that's Hungary. I don't want to talk too much about it. I was very impressed with Corey Anderson. I'll say that. When he won the Ultimate Fighter, I said, this is going to be a guy because he's got great wrestling.
Yeah.
He's got really good boxing, really good technical striking. I didn't think he had a ton of power, but I was like, this is a guy who can frustrate a lot of people. Instead, he was frustrating me because he just wasn't able to put it all together. He was getting caught. His fight IQ was iffy.
Yeah.
And it looks like he's really made adjustments that are going to make him a really dangerous guy.
Yeah, let's see what's next.
Darren Till was on social media saying, telling Tyron Woodley to sign the contract.
Yeah.
To potentially headline UFC 228. I don't think a contract has been signed, but what do you think of the idea of Darren Till getting that title shot after we just saw Colby Covington winning an interim title back in June?
Well, I think the issue is Colby not accepting the fight. So I think the UFC, from my understanding, was a little frustrated that Colby didn't take the fight that they offered him with Woodley. So maybe it was a way to kind of tell Colby, like, hey, we're going to give you a shot up and kind of put pressure. We're moving on. But listening to Woodley... he doesn't really want the Till fight. It seems like he'd rather wait, take his time, and fight Colby, which I think is the smarter move because I think Till's a more dangerous fight.
feels a more dangerous fight, and it's a less marketable fight. Like,
you have
this beef with Colby.
That's where I think it's smart for Woodley to wait for the Colby fight.
Yeah.
Which I think is the smart move.
Yeah,
for
but will the UFC wait for the Colby fight?
Well, that's
the UFC.
Where...
And because one thing that was mentioned, I think it was by Ali Abdelaziz, if I'm not mistaken. I don't want to give a wrong attribution. But he said that there was a possibility of Usman versus Till for the title.
Yeah.
Because if Woodley's not taking the Till fight and Colby's not taking the Woodley fight, the UFC's not going to sit around. They need a main event.
Yeah, but Woodley's pretty pissed off because he's like, look what I've done. And I mean, he is coming back from injury. He's really within the time that he said and doctors would say would be the recovery. Then he needs a good camp. So you're rushing him back. I mean, there is an interim. The interim champ's not ready. So, I mean, it's a messed up situation.
The best point that I thought he made was, tell me I'm headlining in October. Like, if I'm going to headline in September, all I want to know is that I'm headlining in September in advance. Just tell me that, and then I can be ready for September, knowing that I'm going to fight somebody.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that. And he says, I don't like being pressured into these situations.
Yeah, he wants the right fight. He's done a lot in the division. He wants to be part of the negotiation process of who he fights next.
But the problem is, if you have a layoff the length of his, it's been almost a year, you start losing momentum and leverage.
Yeah.
And then the UFC can kind of try to push you around a little bit. Because they need their main event. Like, again,
they need them.
This is not a sport. I continue to say this. It's a promotion. It's a, the mixed martial arts part of the UFC is the sport.
Yeah.
But the UFC itself is a promotion. It doesn't operate like a regular sports league where, oh, this guy's going to fight this guy. They're the two best. They have the best fighting the best, but sometimes they need to break free of that because they have events. They need to have events and pay-per-views they need to fill.
Yeah, but we got to look at the fighter safety. We got to look at, if he goes in now and then he's premature and then he injures himself, then he's out another year in the prime of
his career. Woodley said
he was
ready to go in July. Yeah. So I don't think Woodley's got any issues with performing, but it's just a matter of, like, you know, Till is a tough opponent, man.
But I mean,
I don't know.
I mean, like, we're talking about if the UFC forces, this is why you see guys when they come up with injuries because they have to, you know, they want the right fights. And as a promotion, it happens with Glory, happens with Bellator. You get bullied a lot of times, and that bully feeling isn't a good feeling. I mean, it's frustrating as the person in there to be like, you have to fight on this day. And you're like, well, hold on a second. Like, there's other variables. Yeah. What about
there's
my side? There's other
champions.
So, I mean, you get bullied a lot. So that's why I think even the case with Gustafson, like, guys have to start protecting their image and career, and they want the right fight. So that's where these injuries come out. I mean, because they want the right fights, but you can't blame them. And they don't want to be bullied because you can't really say you don't want it.
But the weird thing is, like, in order to get a main event for that September card, it's like now you're giving somebody a four-week camp. And that's it, right?
Yeah.
Because it's
almost
Woodley
doesn't want
a
four-week camp.
Yeah.
He can't.
Nobody
does.
No champion, I imagine, does.
No.
So what do you do? I don't know. They're in a tough spot right now because they – and, I always say this. I don't think that these cards need to be headlined by title fights. Like, if you can get creative, if you can book something like a Dominic Cruz versus Jose Aldo fight, I mean, that's, again, Aldo's fighting already, but, like, if you can put together
some
fights that have
some
interesting matchups or something that's a little bit outside the box that people are interested in, like, let's say Francis Ngannou versus Gustafson.
Yeah.
Like, if you can put that together as a main event, like, I'm in. I'll watch that for five rounds. It's not
a
title fight, but it's still really – you're like, oh, what would happen with this? Like, right now, Ngannou's kind of struggling, but he was fighting for the title, and Gustafson hasn't fought in a year. Like, your mind kind of starts to work, and you come up with –
No,
you
I'm
know,
okay with that.
But that's they don't utilize that kind of thinking, it seems. It seems like – and I think the reason for that is because if you're bringing the UFC to a city, you want to say to the city, this is an important card. There's a championship on the line. So that people that want to go – like, if people are looking to buy tickets, they're like, oh, my, there's two title fights on this card. There's Shevchenko versus Montano and someone versus someone.
Yeah. But I think for those super exciting fights, they have to come from higher profile athletes. And that athlete that we want to see match up is probably highly ranked in their division and doesn't want to take a chance too. So, I mean, there's so many different variables. But you're right. I don't think you necessarily need a title shot to promote a show.
Yeah. I was saying they should do Ortega versus Mendez. Like, you've got two fighters of Mexican heritage in Dallas where about 45% of the population is Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
Mendez just had a crazy knockout win. Ortega, Ortega's Ortega. He's been destroying
Mendez
everybody.
Mendez is 35er, though? Mendez is a 135er?
45er.
Okay.
Yeah. And this would be for featherweight.
Oh, yeah, because he fought Aldo.
Yeah. So,
just because I see Ortega being so big, it seems like he's so different.
It's
That's why it's hard to sometimes visualize it.
That to me, for an interim title, would be an awesome fight. But
Ortega's probably what? 5'11"? 5'10", 11?
Ortega's tall, yeah.
And then Chad Mendez is probably 5'5"?
Yeah, Mendez is shorter. 5'6", 5'5", yeah.
Yeah, crazy.
But Mendez has always been very short for featherweight. He's just stocky. Like he couldn't make bantamweight.
No. Crazy.
So that's the state of the welterweight division right now.
It's a mess. I think the worst two right now have to be the welterweights and the light heavyweight.
Yeah, for sure. There's no movement.
And even it's heavyweights, stale. we can use some new names in heavyweight too. I mean, what's happening? Are we just not getting enough athletes? What do you think it is?
I don't know. I just.
Where are all
I think the... maybe there's just too many cards for guys to fight on, or the champions are getting injured. Injuries have been rampant. Like, think of how many champions it's midway through the year have been booked, have either defended the title twice or have been booked to defend the title twice. Right now, there just aren't a lot of them. Go through it. Go division by division. I don't think they're. I mean, Stipe twice. This year, he's defended twice. Whitaker once. Cormier hasn't defended. He's only defended light heavyweight once. Welterweight, Woodley hasn't defended. Connor didn't defend. And now Khabib's only fought once, so he's the champion. But he hasn't defended. He hasn't fought twice. So just – and Holloway hasn't fought at all. Dillashaw hasn't fought at all.
Cyborg, we can't get fights.
DJ hasn't fought at all. Cyborg fought once. He fought Kunitskaya.
Yeah, but now we can't get her anything.
Yeah, Nunes has fought once. Like, it's – Montano hasn't fought yet. Rose has fought once. So that's it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's only one champion this whole year that's defended twice, and that's Stipe Miocic. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's crazy. Yeah. So that's really what I think the issue is champions are taking longer layoffs or they're getting injured.
But I mean, like historically, a champion only really wants to fight 2 to 3 times a year.
Yeah.
And I think in now modern day, it's 2. With the amount of money they make, I think the ideal champion would want to fight 2 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 3 times already that you're looking at every 4 months, which, I mean, after a fight, recovery, it's a lot,
it seems,
especially
UFC,
when you're older.
And it seems the UFC won a headline with 2 title fights every pay-per-view, which means you need 24 title fights in a year. Yeah. It's a lot.
It is.
It's a lot to ask.
So I think, I mean, from your champion, I think 2 fights a year is right. I think that's the way
to
go.
They haven't been able to do it. Like, they haven't been able to line it up, which is wild to me. UFC in Calgary this weekend. Before we give our picks, why don't we introduce our guest? We've got the Canadian gangster himself. Have you seen the Olivier Aubin-Mercier fanny pack that you can
buy? I've seen them. Fanny packs, T-shirts with a silhouette with his fanny pack.
Mustache kit.
Yeah, he's been interesting.
I love it.
He's been creating a new image for him. I like it.
He said, well, I don't want to say what he says in the interview. We'll listen to it now. I was going to say he told me this, but he's going to tell it to me in a second. So,
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, here's the Olivier Aubin-Mercier interview, and I'll tell you, we'll get Joe's take on what he said after this.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
It's not often you get to be joined by a Canadian gangster, but today we are lucky enough to be joined by Olivier Aubin-Mercier, coming off a huge win and has a big fight coming up in Calgary in the main card against Alexander Hernandez. That fight will be on the main card on the CTV2 as well as TSN. So thanks for joining me, Olivier. How are you?
Yeah, it's your lucky day, eh?
Yeah, you know, I don't usually get to speak to Canadian gangsters. They're very elusive. You know, they like to keep a low profile. But you're very brave.
That's it.
Yeah, well, that's the way Canadian gangsters operate. anyhow, I mean, it's official now. The Canadian gangster fanny pack is out. Reebok Canada has put together this incredible fanny pack and with accessories. And my big question is, why don't I have one yet? How do I get one of these?
Well, right now we're gonna try to do a draw for it, so people are gonna be able to win it. But yeah, I'm gonna try to get you one. I have to talk to Reebok because we had such a good feedback that I think we need to sell it too. I think people really like it actually. I was pretty surprised because I did this video that you saw 2 days ago. It took me maybe what 15 minutes to film, and maybe 2 hours to do the editing. So it was not too long, and it ended up pretty good. I was surprised about how people react to it.
Well, really, I want to wear it for my own safety. You know, if people see that logo on my fanny pack, they're not going to want to mess with me.
No, of course. They won't, and they're actually going to change their path if you're on their way.
Yeah, they'll cross the road. They'll just go in the opposite direction. That's why we all need to wear these. It's really for our own safety. And, you know, I appreciate you and Reebok collaborating on this because you're making the streets a little bit safer.
Yeah. Like you said, and what's cool about it too, it's when you get in, like, let's say in a bar, all the girls gonna come to you just like that because of the logo, you know. And if you have a stash, it's even better because you can put the oil in it. And I mean, everybody know, eh? The stash is deadly.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a magnet, as you mentioned. But let's move on to your fight in Calgary. As I mentioned, it's going to be on CTV2 as well as TSN, opening up the main card against Alexander Hernandez. So Alexander's a bit of an interesting opponent here because usually when you want to face a ranked opponent, you end up with somebody who has a lot of experience, a big sample size. But Alexander Hernandez has one fight that he finished very quickly. Do you feel like this is a good opportunity for you to move up in rankings because you're fighting a guy who's a little bit less established than most of the other ranked fighters?
Yeah, it's super, and it's such an interesting fight. Like you said, he's ranked maybe 13, with not a lot of experience in the UFC, which is, pretty bizarre, but, the guy is good and he was really, really impressive in his last victory. So for me, it's always enjoyable to do a training camp against a guy like this. Especially this time, like I said, it's such a mystery. We don't know a lot about him. So, we just try to get better for this training camp. We look a little bit at his style, which was really hard for my training partner to mimic. But, yeah, I mean, I have to be careful with this guy. I think he's crazy. I think he's really dangerous.
Yeah, he hits hard. He's finished a lot of his fights. If you look at his record, when you look at the decisions, I think only two wins by decision. So most of his wins have come inside the distance.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? Outside the UFC, that doesn't mean really anything. I mean, when I was out the UFC, my first four fights was one minute fights each time. I finish all of them in 1 minute. But it's a different story in the UFC. It's people are better. They are better to survive. They are better to technically. They know what you're doing. So that I'm not really worry about. But yeah, the guy looks explosive. That's for sure.
Back in 2016, you fought three times. You're on pace to do so again. Is that what you're hoping to do this year, or get another one in before the end of the year if you're successful?
Yeah, of course. If I'm successful this fight, I want to fight in December in Toronto. They just announced it. So December is just before the Christmas, so would be able to enjoy a Christmas, which is really important for me.
Yeah, it'd be pretty similar to when you fought at UFC 206. It seems like you don't fight that close to Christmas. I guess the fight you had with Fajeja back in January of 2016 is really the last time that Christmas would have been part of your training camp.
Oh, yeah, and it was bad.
Yeah, I guess that's really your only loss since the Ultimate Fighter finale.
Yeah.
And do you think the holidays might have played a role in that?
I don't know. I think a lot of things could play a role in that, but mostly because my opponent was good.
He is good. Very underrated opponent. Fajeja is back in action, just coming off a win himself. So when you look at this fight in Calgary, do you like that you're going to have the hometown support? Is that something that's important to you? Your record in Canada has been obviously very good. You have only one loss, and that was in Quebec City in the finale against Laprise, split decision, and then your only other loss came in the U.S.
Yeah, no, I like to fight in Canada. Not only because people are behind me, but because of taxes too. I mean, I pay the same amount of taxes, but when I fight in the U.S., they keep some right away. So that I don't like. So no, I'm happy to fight in Canada, and it's always fun. New part of Canada, like this time in Calgary, we're gonna stay a week after the fight just to see Banff, to see Lake Louise, and I think we're gonna have fun. So if people have some place to tell us to go in Calgary. Just tell me.
Will they be selling the fanny packs at the venue?
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah.
Well, people better get there early.
Yeah. They probably. What I wish is that everybody want come in like with a stash, or just any regular fanny pack. That would be great. I mean, remember when GSP fought in Montreal?
Yeah, people used to wear the gi and the headband.
Yeah, everybody had the gi and the bandana, or I don't know how you call it. Could you imagine if that thing happened, but with the stash and the fanny pack?
Well, I think we need to rally behind this. We need to get people to post pictures on Instagram. We need to come up with a hashtag for this. Like, I'm with OAM. Something like that.
You know, how crazy would it be, eh?
It'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got that. Let's get the wheels in motion. After this interview, we'll start the we'll start getting people on the bandwagon. I like that idea. It's a lot of fun. Speaking of your mustache, you were called out by your teammate, Mirsad Bektik. He came out with a really good, you know, Freddie Mercury-esque, Dan Severn-esque mustache that I thought really was fantastic. And then afterwards, he claimed to have the best mustache at Tri-Stash. Would you agree with that? Do you think you have some work to do to get up to his level?
Man, I have to give him the crown. I mean, did you watch his, did you look at his mustache? Like, damn, it's so thick. It's like so great. I think he won that one.
Yeah, I saw it in person. It's something to behold.
Yeah, yeah, and I hope he's gonna keep it like this. I mean, it's a manly stash. I'm really happy that he kept it.
I spoke to Elias Theodorou, who trains with you recently. He said he would grow the mustache if George grew one first. So is there any traction on getting George to grow one? I know that, you know, he has his signature look, but I think if he's going to be part of the team, part of Team Tri-Stash, he needs to step it up and show some leadership.
Yeah, I have to tell him, eh?
Yeah, I mean, if he's the leader of Tri-Stash, yeah, he needs to have one.
Yeah, I mean, we have one now. Me, Mirsad, Arnie had one.
Mandel
had one.
Yeah.
And at some point, all the amateur had one.
Yeah.
I don't know if Spiros is really happy with that. But I'm happy anyway. So, yeah, we have to change his mind.
Well, as long as you guys are winning, I'm sure you guys can grow fros and shave your eyebrows, whatever you want, and I'm sure Faraz will be happy.
Yeah, that's for sure.
All right, Olivier. Well, best of luck in July. I guess it's currently July, so at the end of the month in Calgary, it's going to be a great card. A lot of Canadians representing. You know, we've got yourself, Jordan Meehan, Cajun Johnson, Hakeem Dawadu, John McDessie, Randa Marco. So a lot of Canadian names on the card. Alexis Davis, I shouldn't forget. So it's going to be a fun night for Canadians. It's Dana White's birthday. He's put together a card tailor-made for excitement. So we look forward to watching it on TSN.
Is Dana White's birthday?
It is Dana White's birthday. Yeah, he said he wanted to put together a card for his birthday that would be really exciting, and you're on the main card. So take from that what you will.
Well, I mean, I understand that I'm on the card, yeah, for his birthday. Yeah, I understand. Yeah, it's a fair choice, yeah.
Make sure you wish him a happy birthday if you know, in your post-fight speech.
Yeah, of course. I won this 50G, so... Why not? I will. Don't worry.
All right, Olivier. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. See you.
That was Olivier Aubin-Mercier. Pretty interesting, Joe. So he says he wants Canadian fans to come to this Calgary event with fanny packs and mustaches to support him. Used to do with the gi with George St. Pierre.
Yeah, why not?
I love it.
I love it,
too. Let's get that going. We need to get the Canadians to rally for OAM.
Yeah, they want that little creepy mustache in the fanny pack.
Exactly.
I like it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's always rocking his sunglasses, too. Like, he's got this like thing going, and it's working for him.
He's got a look.
Yeah,
and Tri-Stash has been the new thing. You got Mirsad Bektik with that phenomenal mustache. Looks like Freddie Mercury's mustache.
Yeah, the stash is coming back, I guess.
It isn't Tri-Star. It is in Montreal.
I can't grow one, so I'm out of it.
So Elias told me he would grow one if George St. Pierre grows one. in solidarity with TriStar. So every time I interview Olivier, I try to plant the seed for George to grow the mustache.
To grow it.
Even if he just grows it for a picture. Like I can't really picture GSP with a mustache.
I think it's like my style. Yeah. Like, I don't think he can grow facial hair.
Yeah, are you the same way?
I can't grow facial hair at all. I have little stubbles on the chin, but couldn't
grow. So if you
let
it grow for like 3 weeks, it would be patchy?
Put it this way. From my sideburn to where my goatee would be, I don't even have one stubble of hair.
Really?
Nothing.
How is that possible?
I don't know. I literally not have one stubble. All I have to do is a little quick shave with my chin, but you won't even see it. They get like that long, straggly, it's not thick. I don't have it at all.
You don't want that.
Which is good, but I mean, beards became a style thing in the last few years. So it means like I'm out of the style sometimes.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know.
So it's very odd. UFC in Calgary. I've got my pick. It's one of my favorite picks of the year. I told you this beforehand. Right now,
let's go through the card first.
Why don't we go through the card first? We'll go through the card first. So, Poirier versus Alvarez, great main event. It's going to be a lot of fun because the first one was a lot of fun. And whenever these guys fight anybody, it's a lot of fun. This is a great main event. So, let's keep in mind this is Dana White's birthday card, he's calling it. He wanted to put together a card that would represent his birthday. Yeah. And if you look at Joanna Jędrzejczyk back on television. She hasn't been on TV for a while. Jose Aldo has never been on TV in his UFC career. It's his first televised appearance in the UFC. This is going to be a special night.
Outside of a really pay-per-view, you're saying?
Yeah, no, I mean on free TV.
On free TV. Yeah, he's only been pay-per-view. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, so this is for sure a really cool card because you get to see two like really long-standing former champions on this card, which I like a lot. We'll see what they've still got left. And, of course, you've also got a lot of Canadians on the card. You've got Cajun Johnson as a massive underdog against Islam Makhachev. But we've seen Cajun Johnson as a massive underdog before, and he wins. He beat Adriano Martins as a big underdog, and he beat Stephen Ray as an underdog last time around. So I don't think he's told me personally on the show that he does not mind me. He says, throw whoever you want at me. I'm supposed to be in the UFC. I should be able to beat anybody. I'm at the highest level.
Yeah, he's a big underdog.
Yeah, biggest underdog there has been in a while in the
UFC. +480.
Yeah. Alexander Hernandez coming off his very successful UFC debut on short notice where he knocked out Benil Dariush against Olivier Aubin-Mercier, who's coming off his first knockout win of his career. So that should be a fun one against Evan Dunham.
Yeah, Olivier has that. You don't expect him to do so well, and he's got that explosive good power to him. He's doing well, man. Like, it's hard to bet against him.
He's great on The Ultimate Fighter. Lost to Chad Lapreeze in the final, but he was fighting at welterweight. So at lightweight, his only loss is to Carlos Diego Fajeja in his UFC career, which is pretty.
Yeah,
and
it is.
Fajeja's a very underrated talent.
He's on a 4-fight win streak.
Yeah.
You know, beating Evan Dunham is huge.
Knocking him out.
Yeah. So, I mean,
Evan Dunham's got a good chin, too. So, Aubin-Mercier is ranked. Hernandez is actually ranked ahead of him, if I'm not mistaken. So a lot at stake for both these guys.
Yeah, Hernandez is ranked at 13, and OAM's not even ranked yet.
No, OAM's ranked.
On the website, on the UFC, it doesn't have it.
Oh, then they must have dropped him out of the rankings, because he's been ranked for a little bit, I thought. I thought he was ranked like 13th. I might be wrong.
No, he doesn't have a number beside his name.
That's weird. Pull up the official UFC rankings. I'm pretty sure he is ranked. Well, I can pull that up.
I have it right here, actually. I can check.
Let's see. You guys can hear me typing away. Click, 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 click. We've also got Alex Morano versus Jordan Mein. Yeah, you're right. He's fallen out of the ratings.
Yeah, he's out.
I guess that's so weird. Why is Trinaldo ranked ahead of him? But I guess Dan Hooker's won two fights, two big fights.
Yeah, Hooker's been good, so.
It's so weird, though. Like, He beats a ranked guy, which is essentially what needs to get you in the rankings. Then he doesn't lose. Hernandez beats a ranked guy and stays.
And then like
none of it makes any sense. Yeah. It's all wrong, Joe. It's all wrong.
Let's not go there again.
Yeah, we're not going to go there.
Yeah,
it's a longer conversation for another day. We need to have like a panel about the rankings. Maybe it's just me who wants that. I don't know if anybody else cares about the rankings. Did I tell you I had a chat when I was in in Vegas for the last card for 226? And I'm hanging out with Rob DeMello from Hawaii, who was always at the cards where Holloway's fighting. Unfortunately, two of the three Hawaiians, Tavares didn't end up dropping out. So Holloway dropped out. So he was there covering basically Tavares and Rachel Ostovich, the two Hawaiians left there. But he was essentially sent there to cover Holloway, who dropped off the card. But we're sitting in a car. I said, yeah, let's share a car. We'll go to the next spot. So we're sharing a car, and he goes, hey, I want to talk to you about something. I go, let me guess, the rankings, because he's one of the guys that does the rankings.
Yeah.
And he was like, listen, man, I just want to tell you, like, I really do follow it. I stay on top of stuff. It's really important to me that I get it right. So a shout out to him. He's never been one of the guys that I consistently call out doing the rankings. There are a couple people that, like Steve Jeffrey, who's a colleague of mine, who's actually based in Hamilton, right, just down the street. He does a really good job, and he's very focused on it and really, you know, is very interested in what's going on. Brian Heminger is one of the most, you know, well, most knowledgeable guys in terms of covering the sport for MMA Oddsbreaker, and he keeps on top of it. Andreas Hale keeps on top of things, and so does Rob. But if you look at the majority of the other people, like, a lot of them don't know what they're doing.
Oh, for
sure. One of the guys ranked like Chad Mendes 12th after his last win. It's like, what are you doing, man?
Yeah, he only fought once.
No, he should be in the top five.
Yeah, I know.
Like, he should be in the top five.
But like, I mean, from his thing.
Yeah, and, like, I don't know what his thinking
but
is.
But that's what I'm thinking, that he's only fought once.
Yeah, yeah.
Since his layoff, so they don't know where he is.
Yeah, Chad Mendes ranked 11th.
Yeah.
It's crazy to me.
No, you can't.
Like, behind Josh Emmett, his teammate.
But Emmett was, what's he ranked now, sixth?
Sixth, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, why? Because he beat. So this is again. They move Aubin Mercier out, but they've got him there, and they've moved Lamas down. I don't know. It's just a mess.
But it's got to be more based on promotional, you know.
And they have Aldo ahead of Ortega again at featherweight.
Hey, this guy's fighting on the card. And sometimes, I mean, I don't want to bash it, but sometimes I see it with Glory. All of a sudden, there's a tournament, and they want to get, all of a sudden, this guy's ranked. I was like, how the heck did this guy get this ranking? It sounds good when you promote it. Number four ranked in the world against number two against, you know, sounds cooler. I mean, strategically, the UFC has these guys. I don't know.
Yeah, it's very odd. So what else is on that card? You got Jordan Meehan against Alex Morano. Yeah. That will be a fun one.
Hakeem Duwadu.
Yeah, trying to get his first UFC win. Yeah, after a big loss.
This is the one he's got to do it. If not, he's in some big trouble.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, he's definitely expected to win. He's a big favorite.
Yeah, Antigula versus Kudalaba, two guys that are certainly guys to watch in the light heavyweight division. Mac Dessy, your guy.
I think that's a great fight. I think they're two guys that will stand there and exchange. It's going to be a battle on the feet. McDessie, explosive striker. You got Pearson, who's the power puncher.
Yeah, more technical also. Gets in and out.
Great fight.
Yeah, Nina Ansarov against Randa Marcos. I like that fight a lot.
Yeah.
Devin Powell versus Herrera. Devin Powell's been a little hit or miss, but he's been good. Chookagian versus Davis is a kind of a sleeper fight because that has big implications in flyweight. The winner of that fight could be the next person to fight the winner of Shevchenko in Montano. Big implications there for Alexis Davis and Chookagian.
Who's Dustin Ortiz fighting?
Mateus Nicolau, a really highly touted Brazilian flyweight.
Okay.
Yeah, he's worth watching, Nicolau.
Because I know Ortiz trains with a friend's gym of mine in Cali.
So Ortiz
CSA gym.
Yeah, Ortiz is ranked pretty high ahead of Nicolau and is a sizable underdog, so it's interesting. So why don't we get to our picks? I I've got one pick that I think is one of my most solid picks of the year. But do you want to go ahead?
Sure. I was leaning towards Jose Aldo to win. I still think he's got it. But my pick, I'm gonna go with because I wanted a little bit of even money. I'm just gonna go with Jordan Mayne. I think he's got the ability with his good elbows, his experience. Even though he doesn't fight much, he's finds a good way to win, and I think he's tough and very difficult, and he's always performed well since he was young, especially in Canada. So, Jordan Mayne.
Well, I'm glad you didn't pick Aldo, because that's my pick. I just cannot fathom how Aldo is only a -130 favorite over Jeremy Stephens.
I wanted some positive money, but that was between Aldo and Mayne were my two picks.
Yeah, so I mean, with...
It's a good thing I didn't ruin your pick.
Like, Aldo, if you look at the guys he's lost to, it's like Conor McGregor and Max Holloway.
He should, on paper, destroy Stevens in my eyes.
Yeah, like, I just don't... First off, it's a three-round fight, which I think plays to Aldo's favor because, like, if you're just going by rounds, Aldo's his freshest in the first three rounds. Stevens is a power puncher, but how often have you seen Aldo get, like, hit by power punchers other than Connor?
Connor. But even Connor was just more of an accurate style counterpunch, right?
Yeah, and Stevens is a little bit less calculated.
Yeah,
more,
Stevens just going to, like, looping, everything, blast. Yeah. But the problem is, when you kick, you end up exposing your head defense a little bit. So if Aldo's going to really attack the legs and Stevens waiting for a nice bomb shot, who knows? But that's the only shot Stevens has. But if Aldo can stay long, pick with the jab, chop the leg on the outside, he's got an easy victory. Yeah,
do
in
people
my
think
eyes.
That Jose Aldo's like trash now? Like I
maybe just not line, seeing him.
I thought this would be that he'd be like a 3-1 favorite here.
Yeah, but I mean, seeing what Aldo's done, Sorry, I'm also not Aldo. Stevens has done.
I'm also shocked Jędrzejczyk isn't like a 6-1 favorite. Like, how's Torres going to beat Joanna Jędrzejczyk? Torres is the same kind of fighter as Jędrzejczyk, but just like not as good.
Yeah, she's going to walk forward.
Like, Torres
just
got destroyed by Andrade, who Jędrzejczyk picked apart over 5 rounds. I don't think Andrade won a single round again. I think she won maybe 1 round against Joanna.
Yeah, but that's not money we can bet on. Still big of an
hour. Yeah, you just
parlay or somewhere.
What you do is you parlay it with Alvarez and Poirier not going the distance, which is like -300.
Yeah,
that fight ain't going the distance. It's not going 5 rounds.
You don't think so?
No, I mean, I don't think so. I don't think at the pace they're going to put on that it's going to go 5 rounds. It could.
I don't know. I'm thinking.
And then, or you parlay it with like Ortiz and Nicolau does go the distance. You got like men's flyweights.
Yeah.
So I don't know. If you could find something to parlay it with.
But yeah, I almost took your pick then, huh?
Yeah, you were close.
Yeah, I like
Aldo. I would have taken it anyways.
I'm an old school
Aldo. I would have just gone with you.
Yeah, then we both lose together.
Well, or I could have just done something else, I guess. I would have said like Aldo was my pick, but since you picked him, I'm going to have to go second.
Yeah.
Like Randa Marcos to me is an interesting pick. I think she has a good shot against Ansarov. She always finds ways to win.
And she's +130.
Yeah, you just look at fighters in the lower weight classes with a wrestling heavy offense, and if she takes you down for 2 rounds, she wins. Like that's all
you can never count out a good wrestler with good takedowns, right?
Yeah, and even Alexis Davis, I think, is +130 is a pretty good value. I don't know if I've just got my rose colored Canadian glasses on, but I think Davis can sub Chookagian in that fight, and is also pretty good on the feet as well. Like it's not just going to be a ground fight.
It's a stacked card. I like it.
I love it. I love this card from top to bottom.
Especially because there's a lot of Canadians that I know outside of, just watching. So it's nice to be invested in a card like that.
Absolutely. So your fighter's fighting in TKO again next week?
Yeah, we have. He's fighting. I don't know who he's fighting.
I'll look it up for you.
Yeah, I can't think. I can't remember.
You know
his
what
name.
TKO number it is?
No clue. I think it's like the first one because it's
your
a new.
What's your fighter's name again?
Tariq Ismail.
Yeah.
He's fighting more of a striker, which is good. Likes to throw his overhand right. But
his nickname's Desert Storm. I like that.
Yeah. So Manny something, I want to say his opponent.
It doesn't even have
Manny
there.
Something. I've been calling him Manny.
Let's go to TKO here. TKO, Manny Major something. League MMA. Let's see. So this is TKO 40. No, this is in August. August 2nd is the card?
Yeah.
TKO it's different Fight numbering. Night 1.
Yeah, Fight Night 1. I don't know. They changed the numbering.
He's not even listed here. What's going on with TKO here? But that's a good fight. TJ Laramie versus Alec Morgan, champion versus champion.
Yeah.
I like that.
Laramie's good. The Laramie brothers are good.
TKO Fight Night 1. All right.
He's on it because I saw the press release that they put out.
All right. Well, let's see.
It's Tariq Manny something.
Ismail. I'm going to look this
versus
guy up.
Versus Manny something or another.
Here, it's good. I think it's listed here. There we go. We've got your guy, Tariq Ismail, on the card against Manny Alfaro.
Yeah, Manny.
Another Canadian guy.
That's it.
Alfaro. I'm going to look this guy up.
Manny Alfaro, 4-2. Poor guy's legs are going to get chopped away.
He's a taller guy for the division, 5'8".
Yeah, the guy likes to stand and strike, but Tariq's...
He's 34.
He's too good. His distance, his striking, his ability to adapt, his wrestling's on point. It's just an easy win for
us. This is a guy who gets lots of TKOs, so who knows?
Yeah.
Against, last 2 wins are by decision.
Against weak strikers,
He hasn't had a TKO in 3 years, so I shouldn't say he gets lost of them.
No. He has a good right hand, some good punching power, but we're too smart for that.
You've been studying the tape?
Yeah, all I have to do is watch a few minutes of it.
And you're like, okay, well, here's what we're going to do.
I got it. Honestly, like, my philosophy in coaching is I don't overplan for the fight. I mean, I'm a big believer in, okay, if I have 8 weeks for your fight, I'm more on developing you as a martial artist and as an athlete. I'm not here... Sorry, Manny, no offense to you or anyone else Tariq fights. You're 4-2, 6-2. I mean, you're not anything special where I'm going to spend 8 weeks planning for you. I've prepared my fighter through the off time to have the ability to adapt. Okay, you throw a right hand? Okay, so what am I drilling a little bit with my fighter? Some right hand counters and follow-ups and, I mean, strategies of avoiding it, but... Man, my fighter learned this a long time ago. It's just verbal cues, and he does it. So, I mean, I think it's wrong to go in there and overplan for someone. Where's your development? You need to be preparing and developing yourself as an athlete, and then you're good.
That's kind of what your philosophy was as a fighter. You just did your game.
I mean, what did I need to prove on my boxing? I didn't care who I was fighting. I'm looking at weak points on my game and improving them. I want to improve myself. Okay, I want to be stronger. Yeah, for me. I want to be faster. I want to be more explosive. I need to clean up my boxing. I need to develop my head movement. So all things to make me a better martial artist and a better athlete. So I'm a big believer in developing yourself and not sitting there spending 8 weeks developing for someone who, I mean, if we're fighting for a UFC world title, it's different. We're fighting, you know, Manny Alfro. I didn't even heard of him. So, I mean, it's just more valuable to just focus on yourself against these as you're developing to the higher levels.
I feel like if you had an Irish accent, you'd basically be just saying what Conor McGregor would have been saying to that exact, you know.
For sure.
That exact statement.
Because it's a smart mindset. All of the athletes are, all of their champions are probably thinking that way. Right away, after they fight, they take a week off, and then they're right back into camp fixing things, improving things, working on it. As soon as my fighters are done, right away, the learning is just crazy.
It always makes me wonder how much, like, people with that championship mentality actually game plan for, based on matchups.
I don't think they have to. I think they've already, you have the skill. All you have to do now is just feel it out in the ring. So, for example, if we fight Manny, I'll use Manny as an example. Our plan is, you know, to stay long, stay on the outside, pick him away, don't get into clinch exchanges right away. But if all of a sudden this guy ends up being stronger than we thought, now clinching an exchange, then all of a sudden we're going to panic. But now we're going to be like, no, it's okay. Let's clinch fight now because we know how to clinch fight. It's not we only clinch fight when we have to fight a clincher. No, we develop 24, you know, all year round. Every time we train, we're learning new skills. So when it's time for camp, you're not learning anymore. You're just preparing. You're sharpening certain tools, you know. You're going to battle, so you're going to bring different tools with you. You got a toolkit. You might bring your long sword. You might bring a gun. You might bring a rifle. You bring all your different tools. And then during fight day, you have all your tools. And then me as your coach, and we're in communication. Like, okay, let's use this weapon. Let's use that one. Okay, this one's not working. Let's try this. We have that ability because that's what good coaching and athletes do. So I pride myself in giving my guys the whole package to be able to fight anyone. We should be able to go fight bare fist. We should be able to fight with boxing gloves. We should be able to fight with a knife. You got to be able to adapt. And
how much knife training do you guys train in the gym?
It's good. I always fighting? Reference it. I do reference it a lot. I'm like, okay, let's play the jab game where you could just jab with you and your partner. But I said, move your feet as if they had a knife at the end. So if they stab you, you're going to hit. So now they're thinking, oh, I got to move differently. It adds a little bit of tension where if that glove touches, you just got stabbed. Yeah. So now they got to stay longer. They got to move. They got to be more agile. They move differently with that kind of thought.
All right. Yeah. Interesting. I want to rewind to a couple months ago where you on the show said, you had an open call out. If any UFC fighter wants to come and train at Bazooka MMA, I'll put them up. You know, I want to do a full camp with them.
Yeah.
Cut to today. What's going on? Do we have any updates?
I haven't. I don't think he messaged my manager yet.
Okay.
But I'm going to reach out. Now that I'm home, I could reach out to him personally.
Well, so the story is I was out covering. Well, first off, when James Lynch was here, you were out on vacation. And I was doing I did an interview with Rob Font. I don't know if he knew that you hosted this show. Okay. But he was like, oh, you guys know Bazooka Joe? Yeah, I love that guy.
Yeah,
you know, I need to come train with that guy. And I was like, okay, great. You know, like I'll put you in touch with him. Joe's like on vacation, but we can figure something out. And then when I went to go cover the card down there, I was doing some interviews backstage at the weigh-ins.
And he saw him.
And Rob Font. Oh no, sorry. At first at media day, I interviewed Rob, and Rob was like, man, I'm serious. You got to get me in touch with Joe. I really want to go down and train with him.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
A lot of guys just say it, but he seems like he really wants to make it happen. So I'll make sure. I just got an email last night, and I saw it this morning, that he added me as a Facebook friend.
All right.
So it's probably now trying to grade it, which is good. But I've invited Elias Theodoro. He said, yeah, he never came out to train. I've invited Misha Serkinov. They said, yeah, he didn't come out to train yet. So Rory McDonald, we've said, yeah, let's train together. We've never trained together. So, I mean, a lot of the guys I've put it out there, but we just, with timing and stuff like that's never happened. But it seems Rob Font's serious about it, so let's do it.
And then
I'll make
then
it happen.
The day of the weigh-ins, I was backstage. And a guy comes up to me, he's like, hey man, I'm a 1-0 fighter, I'm Rob Font's brother, we both want to go up and train with
yeah,
Joe,
yeah, yeah.
You know, we're big fans, we love the guy. So,
yeah, they know, yeah, they know what's up.
They do know what's up,
They know what's up.
So
finally, the people are knowing what's up.
Yeah, so let's go. I want to see you make the walk.
Yeah.
Which you've done with Mitch before.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know if these guys just want to learn in camp or they want me actually in the corner learning and training and coaching.
But so, the first step, right?
All it takes is one session and they'll realize that
Yeah. And we're going to have Rob, you know, co-host the podcast.
That's it. There we go.
He's an awesome guy.
There we go.
I love that guy. He's like got so much energy, so much positive energy.
I actually heard when I was in Glory this past show, we were talking and someone was like, yeah, they were talking about coaching thing. And someone was like, oh, yeah, I had Rob Font at my gym. I was like, oh, he was trying to come to my gym. It was so random that it just, it came up like that random. I can't remember who it was or where he was. I want to say it was someone from Denver possibly.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Did he train in Denver? Do you know for his last camp?
He's usually out in Boston.
Okay.
But
he was with someone that
training with
said
Joe
that he's
Lozon
been there.
And stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay.
So, but when he won his fight in Boston earlier in the year, I forget who was against, but he was
striking looked good.
No, just the people that he was with backstage, they had so much positive energy. They were so happy, and they were so like that. You could tell they were just relishing the moment. Yeah. And I love that. I love seeing that because I see that every now and then. But it's just cool to see. Like it was cool to see that them have just so much energy.
Where would you say his striking is the best? Is he better with his boxing, kicks? How would you rate it compared to?
Well, he's got a really high pace, which I like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his last fight was against Sun Tsao,
who's teaching power.
Well, Sun Tsao is just one of these guys where, I think he has power. Like I'll look up what his record is in terms of finishes. But
well, I'll get him more power. That's for sure.
But fighting Sun Tsao is just a frustrating proposition because
fight.
He's so good. He's so good everywhere, and he I think is one of the smartest guys in the. That has ever fought in the UFC.
Yeah.
So he knocked out Thomas Almeida, who was a guy that was known as a guy who knocked guys out. So that was back in Boston. He got subbed by Munoz. And then he's got a high finishing rate. So has he ever won a decision? The last time he won a decision was in 2013.
My style. Good.
So it's always subs and KOs.
That's it. My kind of guy then.
He knocked out Tristan Johnson, actually.
Nice.
Yeah. I think he's Canadian. Tristan's Canadian. Am I thinking the right guy?
Johnson? Yeah, the one fighting in Calgary.
Yeah, I think he fought in CES, so he knocked out Tristan Johnson.
He's more Calgary based, isn't he? Out there,
Tristan Johnson, I think so.
Well, right here, I had it right.
He fought on the Score Fighting Series, I remember.
Yes, no, Cajun Johnson. I was thinking.
No, I'm thinking of. I think Tristan Johnson.
Tristan Johnson did fight in the Score Fighting Series.
So I'm thinking
of
the right guy. Okay, so so
I got Font confused with Cajun.
Knockout over George Roop. Another guy who used to train with Sean Tompkins, actually.
George
one of the
Roop?
Tallest guys I've ever seen in bantamweight.
I was training Antonio to fight him. Antonio Carvalho was supposed to fight George Roop. And I was, or was it Mitch Gagnon? No, I think it was Antonio. Roop's a 45er or a 35er?
Roop's a 35er.
So I was training Mitch Gagnon for him.
Yeah.
And I remember that.
And he's just huge. He's a tall guy. Yeah. Joey Gomez, he knocked out. Decision loss to John Lineker, which means a lot because John Lineker is a psycho
good.
And knocks guys out.
Yeah.
Knocked out Matt Schnell, a featherweight, flyweight champion from outside the UFC when he came into the UFC through that flyweight season of The Ultimate Fighter. Knocked out Douglas Silva de Andrade, who's a tough guy also. Then lost to Munoz, then bounced back against Almeida, and then lost to a Sun Tsao. So he's only lost to top guys. Like losing to Lineker, Munoz, and a Sun Tsao, I'd say all three of those guys are in the top seven of the division or something along those lines. So
that's good. Yeah, I like it.
And a loss to Desmond Green back in the day, and Desmond Green is like a big 155er.
Yeah.
Right? Or big? Is he? Yeah, I think he's at 155.
He's at 155 now.
Yeah.
He?
So I mean. You're talking about a guy who was fighting up two weight classes to fight Desmond Green. So that's
I like the mentality.
Yeah, no problem there. So, yeah, I like I said, I just love Rob's energy. So hopefully that comes together. Because,
we'll see. I'll try my best now that I'm home for a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. But, yeah, he's going to have to join you on the tour. So take us through your travel itinerary before we wrap up. You're all over the place.
This is crazy. Yeah, so.
I'm gonna be able to finish my coffee while you're doing this.
Well, my next stop is going to be Montreal for TKO, which is Tariq's fight. So I'll be gone there. Then 4 days later, we have Glory Denver, which is going to be, special for me because I have my business partner of Bazooka Kickboxing and the guy who coached, was in my corner the whole time. I was in his corner since the beginning. So we've been teammates and main training partners for years. He's fighting in Denver, Troy Sheridan. That's August 10th. And then I'm basically home for a week, and then I'm off to China. We have Glory 57 Shenzhen, which is definitely tough on my body going to China and back. And then August 15th, we're in Chicago. Then September 29th, we are in Amsterdam. And then October, we'll be in France. So long Glory schedule. We have 5 shows in 10 weeks. Plus, you add my Tariq fight, you have one busy Bazooka Joe.
Yes, you're all over the place.
Yeah,
that's crazy. All over the map. So
Helwani
just tweeted out, by the way, that Costa versus Romero isn't official yet, but it's trending in that direction.
All right. I like that.
That's crazy. That's going to be a great card. Wow. Looking forward to MSG. Yeah, I'm looking forward to Calgary. I'll be down in Calgary this week, so make sure you're on TSN.ca as well as SportsCenter for all of our coverage. Robin Black will be down there with me, and it's Dana White's birthday. We'll be celebrating in style.
Yeah, I heard Robin's got his Instagram removed or something.
Yeah, so
UFC.
It actually wasn't, from what I understand. It wasn't. Okay. It was like something with like the parent, like not the UFC's company, but actually with Facebook and Instagram with video watermarking or something. So. The UFC are actually helping him get it reinstated. So,
okay, good.
Yeah. So let's not point fingers at the UFC.
Okay.
Let's not make that mistake.
I was upset because they've been good.
Yeah, they are good. He did a Glory one recently.
Glory retweeted it. He does, yeah. He does a few with Glory. He does everything. I've seen him animals fighting to kids fighting.
Yeah.
He's analyzing everything. Yeah. So, I mean, I was enjoying him, and then I heard that it was gone. I was like, it's such a shame. Like, I mean, why would people
still on Twitter.
Him?
Yeah, follow him on Twitter. They're all still there. But you're a big Instagram guy, so those are missing. He has started a new account also for Instagram, so just follow. You can find Robin if you're looking for Robin. You'll find Robin. Robin is everywhere. He's an overarching force in this space.
But you've been to Calgary?
Never been to Calgary. I loved Edmonton when I was there last year.
You're just going quickly in and out, though. Right?
I am. I'm in Friday morning.
See anything but the hotel and the arena, probably.
Well, I'll have a little bit of time Friday when I land, because the ceremonial weigh-ins aren't until later in the
You're not
day.
Into going to, like, Banff or anything like that?
I don't care.
You don't care for it?
I care about going to liquor stores in Alberta, because they've got great selection.
Okay.
But
you're still on your whiskey tips?
A little bit. It's just, with another kid on the way, it's...
Yeah.
I need to enjoy my time, but this whiskey is just going to... The good thing about whiskey is, like, there's no expiration date on it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if I, like...
So it's like a nice
I can go back to the
it.
Well back in, you know, when the time comes and I have teenagers and I have to lock the cabinet, but whatever.
Yeah. When they're drinking your alcohol and mixing water in it.
Yeah, of course, the oldest trick in the book.
Yeah.
I'm going to make some sort of fake invention, like modify a thermometer where it will, like, test, like, the water. Like, just tell my kid that it tests, like, the water solubility of it. Yeah. Just make something up.
Why don't we make and design some, like, alcohol caps that you need a lock for?
No, I'm going to just lock it up. Like, they're not going to get to it. My boys, right. I'm sorry, guys. If you're listening to my MMA podcast that you don't know that I do in a couple years from now.
Yeah.
Bar's closed.
That's it. None for you.
It's last call now while the drawer is still
but
open.
But as a parent, though, wouldn't you kind of want to experiment with your... Like, you'd rather your kid have a few drinks with you for the first time probably than have them at a party?
I'd rather they experiment with cheaper whiskey.
Yeah, not the good stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
But as a parent, though, I mean...
I don't care.
I've been to university and stuff like that, and I've seen kids...
I do not endorse children drinking for the record. Underage drinking.
If you go to Europe, I mean, the kids are
18.
All...
Yeah, it's 18.
Yeah, but even before that, you can probably buy alcohol at like 16 and stuff like that.
I remember when I was a kid in elementary school, we went on a field trip. I was in grade 7. We went on a field trip to Montreal, and I walked up as a joke to try to buy a lottery ticket. I said to my friend, like, I'm going to try to buy a scratch ticket. And the guy sold it to me. I was like 11 or 12.
I guess he's like, you can't get into too much trouble.
And I did not look old for a 12-year-old, believe me. I was like 4'10".
You still get carded now, probably, no?
I do, every now and then. And I'm like 36.
I don't think there's been a time I've gone to the LCBO and I did not get carded.
Really? Even like now?
Even now. I still get carded every time I go to the LCBO.
Well, you don't care. You probably don't want to be considered that young at this point.
No.
But for a guy that like fought for a living, you got no marks.
Yeah, like, I mean, if you look closely, I got stitches. I probably got, in my career, on my head, I've probably got 30, 40 stitches in my head.
Oh, jeez, that's a lot.
My head, I got the big gash against Mehdi Baghdad, which maybe put 10. Then over my eye, another 5. And then my eyelid has about 10. And
but you'd have to get pretty up close. Like, I'm looking at you now, I can't see anything.
Well, this one here is the main one.
I can see it a little bit. Yeah, I can see it a little
bit. The one is my hairline, inside my hairline. That's the big one, but there's little ones, but nothing. I got lucky.
See, Joe has like multiple stitches from fighting. I had stitches once from cutting my finger with a bagel knife. So that's if you want to compare the lives of Joe and I, that's probably the best comparison that you can make.
Yeah, but then I got stitches on my forearm. That was football, though. I have a big scar and plate in my. I have a plate and 6 screws in my forearm. That was playing university football as a kicker and punter, if you believe that. And then I got stitches on my hand. There's 7 on my knuckles because anger management as a kid.
Oh, there you go.
My sister pissed me off and I punched a window at home and then I cut my hand. So that's where I got stitches on my knuckles.
You get in a lot of trouble for that one?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Me and my sister fought a lot, so it didn't really surprise me.
There's really no excuse for that one. There's nothing you can say to your parents to get you out of that trouble.
Yeah, but I definitely punched the window and got 7 stitches.
Yeah. All right. My kid has stitches on his head because he tripped and landed on a brick.
How does that feel as a parent? Probably the worst thing in the world to see your kid with blood on them and crying.
The worst thing I've had to go through as a parent is my young one, my toddler, had to have dental surgery. He had a bunch of cavities early on. He has bad teeth. And I had to be there when they put the mask on to put him under. And I was like, I still have PTSD about it. I hate thinking back on it. It makes me sad.
But if coming home and seeing your kid get stitches, that's got to be bad too.
Well, I took him to the hospital.
You had to
he fell and landed on a brick, a brick punctured his head.
How many stitches?
It was 3 or 4.
What do you mean? That's crazy. The poor guy. He's probably picking at it.
He was 5. No, he was okay.
Yeah.
He's a trooper. My kid has a very high threshold for pain for some reason. Both of them do.
Yeah. But as a parent, it hurts you probably more than it hurts them, right?
But we had fun, actually. We were sitting in the waiting room. We were reading. I was reading him a book. Someone was next to us and bought a bunch of Timbits and was like, hey, do you want some Timbits? I was like, oh, it was a good experience. Hospitals usually are bad experiences. But thinking back, it was it was a good experience. He was a trooper about it. He was saying ow when the stitches went on. He wasn't crying. He was good.
It
was, I think, 5 at the time or 6, probably 6.
And they healed. And they healed. You can't really see it anymore. You got lucky.
Yeah. I think there might be a little mark or something.
Yeah.
Yeah,
all right.
And there's our stitch.
We're ending
with our stitches.
I
wouldn't let my kids get into fighting.
No, but if you don't have the choice,
well, I'm surprised you came from a pretty normal upbringing.
Yeah,
for fighters is very rare.
I mean, I was just good at martial arts, and I did have anger management a little bit. I had a hard time losing. If I lost at home or in anything, I'd freak out. So I mean, it was kind of good for me as an outlet to do. And then I was just good at it. I was an average soccer player. I was good. I was better than everyone. I got the sports awards, but I wasn't spectacular. But with fighting and taekwondo, I was just really good. And then it just took off. And then my parents didn't want me to do it either. And then I just said, hey, Mom, I'm sorry, but this is what I'm doing.
Yeah,
you're
going
to support me or not support
and
me.
And Elias is kind of the same story, too. Elias came from a very normal upbringing, Mississauga family. And Elias, the crazy thing about Elias, and I bring this up very often on the show because it blows me away, is he didn't start training any sort of martial arts until he was in university.
Yeah, he wasn't a fighter in upbringing.
Well, he told the story on the show. When he was in university, he got into it with somebody, and they videotaped him getting basically knocked out by a guy.
Like a street fight?
Yeah, a street fight. And someone put it on YouTube. And then he went to go and learn self-defense. And that's how it started. This is in university. And look at him now. He's a top 15 middleweight in the world in the UFC. And he just turned, I think, 30.
Yeah, and he's just learning.
He's still like an infant in the sport.
Yeah, he's just so new. Yeah, I was actually talking to his boxing coach the other day. I was talking to RG, his boxing coach.
You've
the other
been
day,
doing
yeah.
martial arts in some facets since you were 5, 6, young.
Well,
right?
Basically, my father started really teaching me the basics at 4.
Yeah.
I started organized taekwondo at 7.
Okay, so
you know what I mean.
You've been in it forever,
forever.
But he started at age 19 or 20, which is crazy when you think about it, because he's that's 10 years he's been doing this.
Yeah, no, it's
like
crazy.
10 years since he was a white belt.
Like DC started MMA late, but he had at least
a
strong wrestling pedigree.
He was an Olympian.
You know?
Yeah.
But
it's crazy.
Crazy.
That's why Elias is just so impressive. I keep looking at my phone because I'm worried that the main event for UFC 228 is going to break while we're doing this. But it hasn't, so we're going to wrap this up.
And the last thing I'm excited for
you
is
be at your gym in 7 minutes.
I know. Nick Newell is fighting tonight, too, which I'm excited for.
I was
going
to mention that, too.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see how he's going to do. Those who don't know, Nick Newell has
he's a congenital amputee.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Jim Abbott, if you want a baseball example. Okay. But if you're listening to this, you probably don't care about baseball in the 90s.
I was who? What? But I'm excited to see him because I've been following him for many, many years now, and I think he deserves his crack at the UFC.
Yeah,
so.
If he wins, I think even if it's a split decision, I think he's going to get a contract, and I think he's well-deserved and much earned. But, he's only a -155 favorite. This guy he's fighting is a Team Alpha Male guy, 4-0. Good collegiate wrestling background. So this is, they're not giving him a cupcake fight.
Yeah, good. I'll be watching tonight.
All right. Well, Joe, we'll see you next week before you head off to Montreal. Montreal's next week, right? Montreal before I head off to LA. And until then, keep fit and have fun.
That's a new ending.
It sure is. I stole it from Hal Johnson. Copyright body break.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.